This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
This is the horrific, unforgivable, and totally avoidable murder of Elizabeth McCann. I'm Emma Kenny. Welcome to Bang to Rights, the deep dive crime podcast, which takes you through some of the most heinous crimes the world has ever seen. Let's get on with today's case. Now, I'm going to be honest, when it comes down to the background of Simon Gold, that is not something that's been very easy to find out. There isn't a lot of references about him growing up. There isn't any family information in particular. So it's quite difficult to give you a massive background history on him. Aside from the fact he is, without a shadow of a doubt, an antisocial human being who will, without any question, have had a long rap sheet of petty offences graduating to what we're going to be talking about today. Now let's talk about Simon Gold. So in October 2010, he's actually convicted of rape, sexual assault, and wounding. Horrific crimes. And this is in relation to an attack on a neighbour in Lancashire. So somebody that he lives in the locality of. Now instantly, that draws us into the psychology of this kind of perpetrator. This is an individual who isn't afraid to attack somebody who's in his local area, literally a neighbour. And also that brings in the idea that he's got poor consequential awareness and thinking. There's no sophistication. If you're attacking somebody that's local to you, who sees you on a regular basis, the chances are you are going to get caught for that offence. And even though that's positive, we want these kind of offenders to absolutely be caught for these offences. It brings into sharp focus their lack of capacity to understand the consequences of their actions and instead to work on impulse. When you're working on impulse, you're a danger. You can't control yourself. And that means unless something pretty significant, pretty enormous happens, you are going to be a danger again and again and again. Now, Gould had actually raped in this event a recently widowed neighbour. So she was going through a horrendous time when he did this. He raped her at knife point. This is after he'd basically invited her into his flat. So placed her in a position where she felt secure, made her feel safe. Then he stabs her in the leg, tells her he wants to kill her, suggests he wants to bury her in the backyard. And as I said, sexually violates her. Like noted in this position, this is a man who is preying on somebody in their most vulnerable of moments. And I think this is very much testament to the kind of human being we're discussing right now, because he sees vulnerability and he exploits it. And the case that we're going to cover in depth today absolutely speaks to that reality. I have no idea why this man serves, in my opinion, a very small sentence for such a grotesque attack. And also, should this kind of human being ever be walking our streets again? Can we ever say that a woman is going to be safe around somebody like Gould? Now, he's given an indeterminate sentence of imprisonment at the point that he's sentenced. This is for public protection with a minimum term of just under 6 years. It blows my mind that we are talking about such tiny sentences. Genuinely, a minimum term of just under 6 years for violating, raping, and threatening the life of a woman. How is that kind of sentence any way representative of the trauma and harm that he's caused his victim? He's then released because clearly the parole board believe that he's somehow reformed, and then he's given a license for life, essentially, which is whilst he's under the supervision of the probation service. Now, when you talk about a life license, it means basically they're meant to be looked at for the rest of their life because they are clearly a problem human being. Now, he was deemed as somebody who is at a medium risk of offending. I have no idea why anybody would consider that this person was a medium risk. He is offending at a high level in the worst possible way around vulnerable people. I would say he is without doubt, a high risk of reoffending. He's sexually sadistic. This is something about his nature. This isn't an individual who's repeatedly shoplifted from Tesco because they're hungry and ended up in a situation where they've finally been imprisoned. This is somebody who hasn't had any other desire in this circumstance aside from to look after his own needs, to be sadistic to another human being, to put her through an incredibly traumatic sexual attack, and is now being considered only a medium risk of offending. So it was noted when they were looking at these specific risks of him being preoccupied with sexual violence. I kid you not, just a medium risk. Well, what's a medium risk? He's just preoccupied with, you know, sexual violence. When you say preoccupied, do you mean that he can't stop thinking about it? Yeah, he can't stop thinking about it. And ironically, he has actually acted in an incredibly violent, sadistic, sexual way. But we just think like it's only a medium level. Clearly, this guy is a high risk to women. But no, in spite of the fact that he's preoccupied with sexual violence, he's just a medium risk. They also go on to say that this would be exacerbated if he was in contact with lone females. So this guy, who's already raped a woman, is now considered a medium risk, even though he's got a preoccupation with sexual sadistic violence and also isn't safe to be around lone females. Women make up half the population. He's gonna be around lone females, unless there is some very specific guidance where this man is chaperoned everywhere so he can't have any interaction with any female by herself. He's going to come across them. And so he is not a medium risk. He is somebody with a sadistic nature, a sexual deviancy within his nature, and also a threat to women if they are not protected by other people around them at the time he has interactions with them.
Now, this fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
In April 2019, he's actually released from prison, and at this point he's held, as I said, on the life sentence. He's also made to sign the sex offenders register because he's a violent perpetrator and needs to do so. When we talk about license conditions in the UK, basically the rules that you have to follow when you're on license, and if you don't follow those conditions, you can be returned to prison. This is called a recall. Now, the license conditions are basically proposed by the community offender manager, it's known as the COM, but they're also agreed by the parole board in the first instance, and in some cases the final decision about this license will actually be made by the Secretary of State. The license conditions are basically written on the license document. That's what you're given when you're released, so you can be under no questions around how your behaviour is meant to be. Now, the people who are released have to sign it to show that they understand the conditions, and this is something that he would have had to do. And there would likely have been additional license conditions where he's concerned because he is such a predator and threat to women. It's known that Gould posed a danger to lone women, as I said, so this would have been recognised ideally in the licence. I haven't had sight of it, but surely there will have been notes associated with this, particularly in relationship to alcohol, because Gould had a problem when he felt rejected or when he was drinking. So you can put in license conditions that people aren't allowed to drink. And I will tell you now, it fails all the time. And how often they call back to prison, they're not on the whole. It's disgusting, it's diabolical, it's a disgrace, it's also reality. So the idea is that this guy's being sent out of prison with these license conditions, where essentially they're noting alcohol is a problem, so he's not going to be somebody who should be drinking. Well, he's always at the pub. I can tell you that now from what I've researched. So this guy is drinking. And also, he's not going to be around lone women, but he's going to be in social situations where they are everywhere. So the very things that provoke a potential threat to other people because of his behaviour is being exacerbated by his experience drinking, going to pubs, but also being around women in those social situations. So how is this guy a medium risk? How is this an individual who is ever going to be safe being around females? And how Are they going to really check him on a day-to-day level to protect women from any kind of abuse that he has the power and also the predisposition to act upon? Because this is a guy with a sexual, sadistic, violent behaviour and paraphilia regarding sex. He isn't going to let that go just because he's now free. If anything, his time in prison has probably exacerbated and amplified some of these very deviant desires. So it's a ticking time bomb. And this man, let's be clear, is just one example of an individual being allowed to walk free from prison with these conditions without them really being followed up and with them consistently being a danger to the females that they have any contact with. And of course, those females that will be sharing space and time with him, they're not going to be aware of his past. It's not as if he's going to be telling everybody, "Hi, I'm the guy who raped one of my neighbours when she was going through the grief and loss of her husband." Now, despite Gul's past convictions, for some bizarre reason, he's able to join a college course. This he's able to do without a risk assessment taking place, which is horrific. Now, bear in mind, we all appreciate that if you want to live in a society where people reform and change, we want to make sure that offenders can get out of prison and can be rehabilitated, can retrain, and hopefully can become pro-social members of our society. That goes without saying. But there are limits. So you wouldn't want a child sex offender going into a college with young people. Yes, I appreciate they may have a predilection for younger adolescents or young children. But nonetheless, you don't want them around vulnerable 16-year-olds per se, goes without saying. If you're not doing risk assessments on these kind of individuals, you are automatically putting your student population at risk. And having ran a mental health service in one of the largest colleges in Europe, and I did that for a long time, let me tell you, vulnerable young people come in of all levels. We're talking about individuals with developmental delay. We're talking about young people with Down syndrome, children and young people who are growing through the motions of trying to train in certain elements and areas to enhance their experience, but with critical issues affecting their capacity. And that doesn't include all of the 16-year-olds who come who are struggling with their mental health, or the young people who come into colleges early because they're struggling at school and may have been referred to do a college course at 15 years of age. So you don't want anybody who has this predatory nature, and you know has this predatory nature, around these individuals. So this risk assessment doesn't happen. It's meant to occur at the Health and Wellbeing College, which is run by Pennine Care NHS Trust. That's in Ashton-under-Lyne, Greater Manchester. So you'd think if Pennine Care NHS Trust, so literally the National Health Trust, are running it, they're going to be thinking about risk assessments. They're going to be thinking about CRB checks. They're going to be thinking about everything and anything that could cause their vulnerable students an issue, and actually any students an issue, such as allowing a predator to share space with them. Now, the college failed to set up an effective referral system, so that meant they couldn't manage high-risk students such as Gould in an appropriate way. Now, this guy comes in and he starts studying photography, also starts studying drugs counselling at the college. Now, this is 100% insane, and I'll tell you why. I have worked in psychological therapies for 2 decades. I am highly qualified. And of course, I have some very good friends who have themselves been high-level dependents, and then they have got into the sobriety state and then trained as drugs counsellors. And they are probably some of the best counsellors I've had the pleasure and experience to know and to love. However, they haven't got convictions for rape. That would discount you, and rightfully so. You cannot study in counselling if you are a rapist. It is as simple as that. Because if you're getting qualified in this arena, firstly, you could never get a job, because arguably you'd need to go through the checks and you would be seen as somebody inappropriate. But the other thing is, why is he training in this area? Well, the likelihood is, he's thinking to himself, well, I'll get equipped. I could do that privately with vulnerable people. And then you think, okay, so what's the mindset there? He's thinking about being around people that he can prey on. He wants to look like he's responsible. He wants to seem accountable. He wants to have this mask of being an appropriate human being, but it covers this absolute monster. Now, when he starts attending that college, he's 51 years of age. It's here that he meets 26-year-old Elizabeth McCann. This is in November 2019. Basically, they were both ascending the same classes. So Elizabeth McCann's a really nice person. She's the kind of individual that's going to take you at face value. If you seem nice, she's not going to question your background. She's going to accept you. And she was known by her friends and family as Lizzie. She was the daughter of Debbie and John McCann. Her mother was super protective of her, as was her dad, and they were described as really close-knit as a family. In fact, one of the neighbours said, if you saw one of them, you saw all of them. They were literally always together. So we're introduced to Lizzie's family being this really kind, considerate, caring, supportive, and deeply protective group of people. Now, she's at the same college as Gold. She's attending courses at the Health and Wellbeing College. She's basically trying to better her life. She's trying to get her stuff together to move forward for a more productive, progressive future. And she was actually receiving help for mental health issues. She had actually been described as being a very vulnerable young woman. Now, what do we know about predators? Predators are so effective at zoning in and fractures in your foundation. If they see somebody that they can exploit, they just sniff it out immediately. So she's in the worst possible situation. She has this deviant sexual predator that she is sharing space with unwittingly. She has no idea about his background. There are none of the safeguards in place that should be in place to protect her at the college. And so she is just taking him as another fellow student. You're not going to be terrified of somebody who's in your class. It's just the bias of security. All of us do that. We share space with people who subscribe to a course that we're doing, and we just assume they must be fine because, hey, they're attending college. They're in a classroom with us. This is just so normal, and that will make her feel that she can trust him. It's an incorrect assumption, but it's an assumption that so many of us make. And the really sad thing here is that Lizzie had been sexually abused as a child. So not only is she vulnerable on a mental health level, understandably, being a survivor of sexual violation as a child, she's also going to be somebody that, like I said, has clear fractures that he'll see. He'll note that there is something there that he can exploit, and that will be very tantalizing to him. Bear in mind, when he raped his first victim, if that was his first, I would imagine that he's probably done it before and just not got into trouble for it. But in that first instance, she had lost her husband. She was in a deeply vulnerable state. He sniffs it out and then he exploits it. Lizzie was said to be somebody who just loved doing so many things. She really enjoyed life. She played football with her mum. She was a massive Manchester City supporter. Her mum was actually a Manchester United supporter. So they were obviously a loving family who were quite happy to stand on different sides when it came down to those all important football matches. Her family said that Elizabeth just loved nature. She loved to go on walks, and her favourite place to go was Blackpool when it was Halloween, because she just loved seeing the decorations and costumes. And again, even though we're talking about a grown-up woman, there's a naivety and a childishness, isn't there, to those interests. There's something innocent and beautiful, and that's what we're talking about when we're describing Elizabeth. She was genuinely a lovely human being. She was good friends with somebody called Gaynor Hamerton. She was actually a former student who turned to volunteering at the college, and she had lots of nicknames for Elizabeth, things like Dizzy Lizzie, because apparently she was just always buzzing about. But the truth is, there was something about her character and personality that stood out, something that made her just really likable. She's described as beautiful, amazing, kind and lovely, and she was said to be really friendly, really bubbly, really happy to help you, and also very happy to help others. People say that that is very clearly seen in her work as a charity worker, because that's what she was involved in, charity work. So she's this all-round good person. If you were ever going to think about polarities, we have Gould here, this nasty, predatory, sexual sadist deviant. And then we have Elizabeth Lizzie here, this kind, caring, compassionate, seeing the best in people, doing her best for people, loved by her family, a light in this world. So distinct from one another, and yet in this sliding doors moment they end up in the same place at the same time. And she will meet him with her own perception of this world. She will meet him believing the best in him, not the worst in him. And that's a mistake that so many of us make. Lizzie was also described by people who knew her as being really trusting. She just always wanted to make new friends. And one of the things that her dad says was, even though it's a beautiful quality, it was detrimental to some degree. She was too trusting. Her family described her as having the biggest heart anyone could ever ask for. Also, that she had the warmest smile, and she does. You just see the pictures of Lizzie and you note that she has this really warm, inviting, engaging smile. Now, when we talk about Simon Gould, wow. There are so many warning signs that this guy should literally have a red arrow pointing down at his head consistently. And bear in mind, if there are warning signs, when we have a sexual deviant predator of sexually sadistic qualities like Gould, you would imagine, wouldn't you, that probation and the police would be falling over themselves to act on these warning signs, because we all know what happens when they fail to do that. People die. You know, this isn't a failure that is a minor issue. This isn't something where somebody gets sent the wrong information. This isn't a breach of confidentiality, which is bad, but essentially we can understand why things have played out. We're talking about something enormous. We're talking about failing to act on warning signs that lead to the death, to the murder, to the brutal slaying of this beautiful young girl. So it begins when Gould informs them that he basically had a small relapse with alcohol. Now, bear in mind, his license will state that he's not allowed to do things that put him in a position where he might reoffend. Drinking will be one of them. But you know how it will be. He'll admit to his probation officer, "I had a small relapse." And the reality is, by throwing himself with that apparent...
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at MinkyCouture.com.
Honest dialogue onto the probation officer, they'll be sympathetic and empathetic and be like, okay, well, hopefully you've got it all back together, so we're not going to have to send you back to prison. Send him back to prison. Clearly, he needs to be recalled. He's not following the license agreements, but that doesn't happen. Also, he basically says to them that a woman he'd hoped to become intimate with had decided not to pursue the relationship, and bear in mind, that means that he's struggling with that abandonment issues that he's talked about before and has been noted in his license, that he's a danger in certain scenarios where he feels rejected by women. So we've just evidenced that firstly, he's taking part in drinking alcohol, which he won't be allowed to do. And secondly, he's going through an event which activates the kind of predatory nature that is totally dangerous about this human being. And yet, what do they do? Nothing. It is blindsidingly disgraceful that they do nothing. We get to July 2022. This is when there's actually an incident. So basically, what this incident is in July 2022, he's in a Wetherspoons pub in Ashton. He's drunk and he tries to kiss Gaynor Hamerton. Now, this is a friend of Elizabeth's. Gaynor had been a former student. As I said, she turned into a volunteer at the college, and she's really unhappy about what plays out. And she reports Gould to the college manager after the incident because she feels really uncomfortable. Also, bear in mind that he's a student. She's a volunteer member of staff. There's a clear boundary issue there. And at this point, somebody needs to be managing Gould because he is acting in an inappropriate way. He is making a member of volunteer staff feel deeply uncomfortable. He has breached boundaries that he shouldn't be breaching, including drinking. This is a bang to rights moment. He should not be allowed back into the college, and he certainly should have that re-referred back to probation to act accordingly. Now, the college don't. They don't do any of what we would expect. And I have worked, as I said, in a really large college. Our safeguarding procedures were specifically protocol-based. That meant that we had to follow a procedure. We didn't get an option. And the reason those protocols are followed is even when you think you'd rather let somebody get away with something, you can't do that based on what could happen. Not what will happen, but what could happen. Because let's say you ignore it and then risky behavior occurs, somebody gets hurt, it's going to come back on you and you'll be the one losing your job. So you follow the protocol, absolutely, where safeguarding is concerned. But that's not what happens. So because the college fails, and they fail on a range of levels, but one of the big ones is they fail to inform probation services about the incident and they deal with it instead informally, nothing gets done. Instead, the way they manage it, and this is so arrogant, it just speaks of mismanagement, poor protocol, terrible safeguarding, and a failure to truly understand the risks that they have around their students where somebody like Guild is concerned. Because the way they manage this is to just have a chat with Guild, to just tell him his behaviour's inappropriate. I mean, because that's how it works, isn't it? I mean, at the end of the day, you know, somebody like Guild, massive rapist, violent perpetrator, sexually deviant, massive issues around sexual sadism and inappropriate feelings about what he'd like to do to women on a violent level, but talking will solve it. I mean, I don't know why we bothered with the first charges and put him in prison. Just sit him down and have a chat. It'll be absolutely fine. At the end of the day, you don't even need sentences. You just need a stern talking to with a little bit of conversation around inappropriate behaviour. Do you know what, Mr. Guild?
What?
You know how you try to, you know, inappropriately kiss a young woman who's volunteer staff?
Yes.
Well, you know that that isn't acceptable. Oh, is it not? No, it's not acceptable at all. So what we're going to suggest is don't do it again. Oh, okay. I didn't really think it was that inappropriate, considering I have raped and violently assaulted previous women. So at the end of the day, on an inappropriate level, it really didn't even focus or feature. Honestly, it's devastating to imagine that we're talking about the murder of a beautiful young woman and these massive red flags were just ignored because some idiot, and there's no other word for it, and I hope whoever actually did make these decisions watches this video, because I really want them to take that information and absolutely replay it in their mind again and again and again. Idiots. Arrogant idiots who somehow felt that it was appropriate to completely abandon the safeguarding of students because, you know, they thought that they were good enough to solve the issue themselves. How dare they? And it speaks to that lack of professional conduct. And the problem is, it speaks to danger regarding the individuals who this kind of man had contact with. And if this kind of man had contact with other students in such an inappropriate way, then what about other students that are attending the college? If the protocol around managing him was avoided, then who else's protocols are being avoided? And that really does concern me, because this won't just be a one-off. I'm sure they'll be doing a lot now to try to sort things out, but nonetheless, it's a little too late. Now we get to August the 19th, 2022. At this point, Simon Guild and Elizabeth, they're both in attendance at a coffee morning at the college, because clearly they both attend there. And so there is some familiarity between the two. She knows who he is. And it's like he starts to really hone in on Elizabeth at this point. And on August the 24th, 2022, he's basically making multiple searches on Facebook. He's looking for Elizabeth's name. He's trying to find her. And then when he actually does, he messages her and he asks her to meet him at the pub. Now, on that fateful day, Elizabeth's parents, first of all, drop her off at a friend's house. She leaves this friend's house sometime before 3 p.m. She said that she's got another friend that she's going to meet called Brenda. She's saying that she's going to go out for a few drinks. But then, sadly, she calls Guild. He'd reached out to her. He'd asked if she was okay. And he's therefore acting in a way that makes her feel safe. You know, he's getting in contact with her saying, you know, are you okay? A little bit worried about you. At the time, he's been playing pool at the pub on Old Street in Ashton-under-Lyne, and Lizzie decides that she's going to go meet him. So this is about 2:40 p.m. when she meets him for a drink at the Starring pub on Old Street in Ashton. And from this point, he's putting a plan into motion. Bear this in mind, guys. This is a man who has deeply premeditated what is going to happen, because when she arrives, he starts to ply her with drinks. And I mean, he plies her with drinks. Now, her dad, John, he receives a call just before 4 p.m. But when he answers it, because it's from her phone, it's actually a man on the phone, which must have really perturbed John because it's unusual. But this guy says, can Elizabeth stay at his house? So Mr. McCann at this point insists on talking to his daughter. Of course he does, because he's a good father and he wants to make sure she's safe. And he also clearly wants to talk to her to make sure that she's not being forced to say that she wants to stay somewhere. So she comes on the phone and her dad says, yeah, you know, you can stay. She's a grown-up woman. But he also says, listen, make sure you phone your mum to say goodnight, because otherwise she'll worry. And also he reminds her that she shouldn't be drinking because she's on medication. Now, Elizabeth at this point says, yeah, I know that. And she promises that she's going to call her mum that night. And she also reiterates to her father that she's only actually drinking Coca-Cola, which I certainly believe would have been her plan. Unfortunately, it wasn't Gould's plan. He just wants to make sure that she's drunk. He buys her several rounds of double vodka and Coke. We all know vodka is more difficult to decipher in drinks. And if she isn't used to drinking, she may well not be aware that there's vodka in there. Also, he starts buying multiple shots of Sambuca. Now, I don't know about you guys. Guys, I'm a lightweight. You know, I'm the same after one glass of wine as I am after a bottle of wine. It just sends me a bit goofy. But I have occasionally been one of those girls who has felt coerced and forced into a scenario with very good friends who are very dominant, who have made me have shots. And I have been in a situation where I've had Sambuca shots, and boy, I don't remember anything about it. I do remember the hangover after it, but it totally sent me west, and I'm sure that it does with a lot of people. And this is a young woman who doesn't drink a lot, and he's going back multiple times to get these shots of Sambuca. In fact, he went back to the bar 3 times to get those, and it's seen on CCTV buying those rounds of Sambuca shots and giving them to Elizabeth. And in fact, at one point, he pushes a 4th towards her. This is after she's already drank 3. As noted by what her father said, she's already on medication that she shouldn't be drinking alcohol with. And she didn't drink in her history. It wasn't something that she got involved in. So by 4 p.m, so a very quick period of time that she gets incredibly drunk, she is absolutely paralytic. She is falling over. She's falling sideways off her seat. And she's even being physically sick. Now, at this point, the only place she should be going is hospital or home. Simple as that. When she's in this much of a state, all he should be concerned about is getting her to a place of safety. But that's not his plan. It's never been his plan. The way that she is in this moment is exactly as he intended her to be, because she can't consent to anything and she has no capacity to say no. And she also can't fight him off. That's what he wants. This is something he's planning. This whole scenario playing out, it's calculated. She actually needed assistance to even stand up. Now, it breaks my heart that during this situation, staff didn't intervene. I feel that when you see a girl with a much older guy and she's in such a state and he isn't, that provokes a real level of fear. I would resist that person from leaving. I would make it clear that some kind of attendance needed to occur regarding some medical help, or a parent could come. And I know that people struggle with that, but that is the right action. I'm not blaming the people who were actually serving. I'm just saying that I understand why people don't get involved, but in my opinion, you should. Also, just worth noting this, during that entire time at the pub, he only had 1 pint, just one. Now, one thing that I would say about the staff in this pub is they stopped serving him drinks because they could see that Elizabeth was clearly drunk and that he appeared really sober. So at least they didn't allow him to keep purchasing alcohol to give to her. And then Gould actually escorts her out of the pub, and he has to literally prop her against the wall whilst he orders a taxi. That is how paralytic she is. And it gets worse, because at point one in the pub, an intervention should have taken place. I genuinely believe that. No one should have let him walk out with her. And let me tell you, I have the courage of my convictions. My husband, he was a very successful DJ for quite a long time, and we would run nights occasionally in Manchester. I have nightmares about those nights looking back. because it's quite stressful. But we would regularly, because we were running nights and their house music nights, have young people who, shall we say, got a little bit intoxicated, sometimes on alcohol, but often on recreational drugs such as ketamine. And if you see somebody who's intoxicated with ketamine and alcohol, it's not a pretty sight. Whenever we saw a guy with a girl in that state, we got that girl and we got her home address and we sent her home in a taxi with a trusted taxi driver. My husband, myself and the bouncers always worked together. We had a plan, we worked that plan. And while some people might have thought that was a bit of an overreach of personal liberty, literally making sure the girl got home without the guy, it's not because we had to look at every man as a potential rapist, it's that we just didn't want to take any risks. Simple as that. So I have the courage of my convictions when I say intervene in these situations. So that, in my opinion, is one of the first failures. But then the taxi driver. And again, I know the taxi driver's job is not necessarily to analyse everybody who gets in the taxi. They don't get paid enough. They've got the next job to go on to. But sometimes I just think, what's going on that you can't see how inappropriate these things are? So they're going back to Gould's flat on Manchester Road, and the taxi driver said that Elizabeth looked completely out of it. He asked Gould if she was going to be okay. Gould responded at this point saying, oh, don't worry about it, she's just drunk. But during the journey, he is sexually assaulting Elizabeth. He's kissing her neck. He's touching her intimately when she's completely unresponsive. She's completely lifeless. And at that point, if you are driving a taxi, you can see she can't consent. That's illegal. It doesn't even matter if they're in a relationship consensually. It is not something that you can consent to when you are all but unconscious. And arguably, I would have said, I'm not going to let you take her out of this taxi. I'm going to drive to a hospital. But that doesn't happen. Now, it's shortly after 5 p.m. that the couple get out of the taxi and they arrive at Gould's flat. Elizabeth, at this point, falls over because she's completely outside of any realm of being able to compute what's going on because she's so inebriated. And then he basically just escorts her up to the stairs of his flat. They get to his flat, and then after just 15 minutes of getting back, he's taking explicit videos and photos of Elizabeth on his mobile phone. And this has been his plan. He's literally calculated, premeditated, and then put into action all of these plans, and now he's got her. She is in his lair. She's completely unable to resist. He's putting her in positions. That means he's sadistically pleasing himself, and she is now his victim. He is her captor. And there's a number of videos in which she's seen to have clothing around her neck, because we know that this guy's sadistic, he likes choking people. And Gould's repeatedly asking her if she wants to be tied up. Now, Elizabeth does say that she did at first, but that's because she doesn't have a clue what's going on. Like, she's not computing this. There's no consent there. But then as he starts to do these things, she's saying to him, it's not fun. It's really painful. So she's vocalizing and verbalizing that she's...
This fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
Uncomfortable and in pain. And think about the amount of alcohol that she's drank. Alcohol is a painkiller. It's something that acts as an analgesic on a temporary level. And when you hurt yourself and you're drunk, you often don't feel it. The very fact that she's drunk and is feeling the pain, that demonstrates the level of sadism that's involved. In one of the videos, Elizabeth's actually seen bound at the hands with a t-shirt around her neck, and she is telling him it's hurting. Then, and this again is the next failure, for 25 minutes, shouts and screams could be heard by the other residents in Gould's building. 25 minutes. I am astonished that anybody can be present in a residence, in flats and apartments around this kind of attack taking place. And listen, to a victim shouting and screaming and not have the common decency to just pick up the phone, to not ring 999. How difficult is that? You don't even need to say who you are. If you've got a problem, you want to be anonymous? Sure, crack on. They listened to her screaming and shouting and being harmed in the most grotesque of ways, and they did nothing. Shame on them. Gold renders Elizabeth unconscious because clearly she's making too much of noise and she doesn't want anybody to disturb him. And then after he has done this, he takes an image of her naked and unconscious. He's enjoying every single second of this. Now, at one point during the night, he does actually message a neighbour. He asks the neighbour for help, and the neighbour has learning difficulties, so we have to be aware it's not going to be very easy for them to act as you or I might typically act because they're not computing the world quite as you or I are. The neighbour does go over to be a good person, goes over to Gold's flat, finds Elizabeth naked and unconscious on the floor, but they just end up helping Elizabeth get on the bed. Both of them move her together. And he just says, look, she's just drunk. So this person is reassured that things are fine, although with respect, the screaming and shouting would suggest to me that things weren't fine, even if you do have issues developmentally. Now, whilst at the flats, Gold doesn't just stop with what I've talked about. No, he goes on to rape her. He sexually assaults her. She was subjected to some really horrific injuries, guys, really serious genital injuries, and then she was murdered. And she was murdered by prolonged strangulation. That's what happened to Lizzie, that lovely girl who just saw the best in people and then was coerced into this tragic situation where she was brutalized, tortured, and killed. After he's had his fun, because that's what this was about. It was about him living out his fantasy. Bear this in mind. He's been in prison after a serious, serious sexual deviance. And he'll have spent that time in prison thinking about what he'd really like to do to a woman. You know, he didn't quite get to do what he did with the first one as he wished to, because she lives. And at the end of the day, he's already done that. So now he's got to up the ante. And the only way to do that is to kill. Is to live out that violent fantasy that he's clearly been hoarding for a very long time, whilst he's been allowed to roam the streets and join colleges and get away with being around vulnerable people. He's hoarded this fantasy, and now he's had the opportunity to play it out. The following day, he calls the police, reports a death to them. He dials 999 and says that, quote, there's a dead woman in his bedsit. He also tries the classic, says he's killed her by strangling her during sex. And even though we can all take a sharp intake of breath and say, well, that would never work, believe me, guys, it has done before. In fact, I can tell you the rough sex defence has successfully been used to take individuals who have literally tortured and murdered, clearly, their partners, and yet somehow have claimed that it was all consensual and had their charges dropped to something that's a little bit like somebody being criminally negligent. Literally. That has been an effective defense. So he's probably hoping, hey, maybe I can get away with this. I didn't actually intend to kill her. We were just having consensual sex and then she died. Oh, it's a sad accident, not a heinous crime. The police obviously go to the flat, and at this point they find the dead body of Elizabeth McCann. Also, what worries them is the fact that he's already tried to dress her, and that suggests guilt. Because if you've done nothing wrong, you're not going to try to stage a scene that looks different to how the scene truly is. That was certainly an attempt to cover up the severity of what had happened. And that again suggests a very serious level of premeditation in her murder. Also, they discovered her trainers and a mobile that had been placed neatly nearby. So again, it's a very odd scene to walk into, and these police immediately feel that something is very wrong. At this point, 51-year-old Simon Gold is arrested, remanded into custody. Can we just send him to hell with immediate effect? Is it possible to just go, oh, We've figured out that you're just a heinous murderer. I've just typed in and I see your previous history. If you could just step this way. Why, where are we going? Just step this way. I'm not sure that I should step that way. Why? Because I'm not sure that that isn't a 51-foot drop. Step this way, sir. Just through the window. Anyway, that didn't happen, just in my fantasy, and it was deeply satisfying, even though I was only allowed to hold it for a second. So he's arrested, remanded into custody. During Gould's interview with the police, he basically says a pack of lies. Of course he did, because that's his intention, to somehow fulfil this dark, sordid, sadistic, murderous fantasy and get away with it. So he says to the police, you know, yeah, initially I just chatted with Elizabeth on Facebook, I'd messaged her because you know what? She was crying during the college coffee morning. You know, at the end of the day, I just messaged her and I was like, are you okay? And she was like, yeah, I'm okay. I was like, oh, well, are you? Because you were crying and I want to be a really good person and check that you're fine. And it's all because I'm a really sympathetic and empathetic human being. I mean, what a pile of absolutely BS. So he's saying, I'm a good human being. She was upset. I wanted to check that she was cool and okay. Said that they were friends from college, which they weren't. You know, she'd seen him. They were not friends. You don't have to trawl your friends on Facebook to find where their profile is so you can message them because you're already friends. The fact is, they weren't friends. He's just cultivating this ludicrous story around the reality of what actually happened. He also said that he didn't think that anything sexual would happen within the situation when they met at the pub. Well, he clearly did. He was playing her with alcohol and he took her directly back to his flat after he got her so drunk she was vomiting and unable to stand. He was also sexually violating her in the cab. So that's BS as well. But this is what he's saying. He said that at the pub he offered her some tobacco that he had at his place and she basically agrees to go back to his because of that. Now, that might be true. Maybe she thought he would give her some free baccy. It is very expensive, particularly if you're a student. And that could be a quality that you'd see in that person as a positive thing. Oh, great. He's going to give me some free tobacco. I'm not saying it's true, but that would make sense that she got in a taxi to go with him if that were the case. Of course, even if that were the case, by the time she gets in the taxi, she's absolutely drunk beyond belief and doesn't know what she's doing. So even if initially she'd felt she wanted to go back to his place, certainly at the point that she does, she has no idea of what's happening and should be sent home to somebody who loves her and can take care of her, as opposed to travel back with him to his place where she is completely unsafe and where she can be violated in the most heinous of fashions. He then says that he gave her a glass of orange juice and after, you know, he'd given her the glass of orange juice, things developed. Now, I know this is going to sound judgy, guys, and please feel free to abuse me in the comments because of what I'm going to say, but I really don't care where this man is concerned. There is absolutely no way on God's earth that she would look at him sideways. I promise you, this young, pretty, beautiful smiler of a woman would not give him a moment when it comes down to the potential of having any kind of relationship with him. He is not in the same universe, looks-wise, as her. Personality-wise, as her. Intelligence-wise, as her. She is better than him in every single way. And the idea that he gives her a glass of orange juice and she's like, oh, let's get intimate, is again an absolute lie. So he says she has the orange juice, things develop, and of course they have this consensual sex. She wants it, essentially. He says that at this point, he asks her if she wants to be strangled, because I don't know, guys. It seems to be completely normal, doesn't it? You know, you hook up with someone, you get a bit jiggy, and then they're like, should I just strangle you? And you're like, oh yeah, why not? Just strangle me. I mean, it's our first intimate experience. It feels like a completely rational thing to do. Absolutely, go ahead. Says nobody on the first date on the whole. But apparently she agrees to this. He then pulls on a t-shirt a little, but then she really likes it. And because she didn't lose consciousness, he carries on. But then he says, you know, obviously, even though I was loosely pulling a t-shirt and she was enjoying it, suddenly I realised that she'd lost consciousness. And then I realised that it had all gone wrong. So not only is he creating and fabricating this story that Elizabeth is somebody who wants this kind of rough sex, he's then suggesting that he's just loosely pulling her t-shirt, just a little bit, and suddenly she's completely unconscious. which happens never, literally never. It actually takes quite a lot of power to make somebody pass out by choking them. He knows what he's doing. He's planned how he's going to do it, and he does it. He also claimed that Elizabeth had given her full consent to everything that had happened, even though she was vomiting and unconscious almost at the pub where the people who were serving said no more alcohol could be given to her because she was in such a state. But she was fine. You know, she was fully consenting, even though no law would acknowledge that was a reality. He also said, you know what? It's really sad because I didn't actually intend to cause her harm. Did you not? Did you not intend to cause her harm? Did you not intend to cause the person you raped harm before that? Just thinking that maybe you're a massive liar. But apparently he didn't want to harm her. And he said that he had no sexual motive and that her death was an accident. I know it's not appropriate to just randomly taser people in interviews. I'm just saying that if there was a grade met for being able to just taser people in interviews, maybe just a cattle prod, maybe a light cattle prod. You know, like he's just a medium risk to women. Maybe just a medium level cattle prod or taser, or I don't know, laser weapon from some other universe. Throw it out there, guys. Just saying. Medium risk, medium voltage. So he basically said that the next morning, after this has all been consensual, she was enjoying it, it was all fine. He realises she's dead. So she's just died. Because that's what happens when you go out and have a bit of intimate space with somebody. You end up dead. It's really common. If you don't see those private ambulances going to houses all over the UK on a Sunday morning after a heavy Saturday night, I don't know what's going on. It's unbelievable that this man is thinking about saving his own skin after literally stealing the life of this gorgeous girl. And then he said the reason that he redressed her was for her dignity. Yeah, he's just, again, compassionately thinking about Lizzie, this woman who's got horrific genital injuries because she consensually agreed to this apparent sex and then just happened to die. He said the reason that he dressed her was because he'd panicked as well. He knew he was going to go to the police and he didn't want it to look too bad. Well, it does look bad because you're a massive murderer. Now, as I've already alluded to, the post-mortem was horrific. The things they discovered were just terrible. She had suffered from really serious injuries, so significant internal and external injuries, along with ligature marks around her neck. So you know that light strangling, that just loose pulling where he didn't think he'd done any damage? Well, they left massive ligature marks. So it's absolute BS. And bear in mind, this guy wasn't drunk. He'd only had one pint during the period of literally plying Elizabeth with alcohol, so he knew exactly what he was doing. Elizabeth had actually suffered 46 internal and external injuries. They included the ligature marks on her neck, but like I said, horrible genital issues as well. It was suggested by the individual carrying out the autopsy that the marks could have been caused by a t-shirt being really held tight around her neck. I imagine that that makes sense. I mean, you think about tightening a t-shirt around somebody's neck, it's going to be very easy to get to a situation where it creates that ligature mark. Also, when it came down to the toxicology, we already know that she was being plied with alcohol. She had 109 milligrams of alcohol in 100 millilitres of blood. The legal driving limit is 80 milligrams. So when they tested her, and this is hours, of course, after the actual death would have occurred, this is the amount that was in her blood. So it would have been much higher at the time she was being attacked. And when it came down to the actual cause of death, it was ligature strangulation. Of course it was. That's clearly his go-to. That's something that he clearly enjoys. And it's something that I would say he has fantasized about for a very long period of time before actually going ahead and murdering Elizabeth. Gould was charged with murder, sexual assault, rape, and also two offences of assault by penetration, because you know what? The police didn't believe him, and rightfully so, because this guy has got a serious MO, and this guy is somebody who is dangerous around women as per what is written in his parole notes and as per the guidance that should have been followed when it came down to probation. But none of this matters to some degree because Elizabeth is dead, and that's what we're talking about. We're talking about this massive failure when it comes down to this man being able to walk around, take a girl back to his home and kill her. We get to February 2023. This is when he was tried at Manchester Crown Court. He's 52 at the time of his trial. He pled not guilty. I kid you not, not guilty to the five offences he'd been charged with, but instead he pled guilty to an alternative offence of manslaughter. So basically what he's saying is, you know what, you've charged me with all these clear offences because of the massive injuries, because of my prior behaviour, no doubt, because I come across as a consummate liar. But the truth is, in spite of that, I'm innocent. Because, yeah, I did kill her. I just didn't mean to kill her. So he's saying, yeah, yeah, I did actually do it. But hey, it can happen to anyone. At the end of the day, I just went home with this girl for some intimate experience that I didn't even know what was going to happen, but she liked the orange juice and then things went further and then she died. But at the end of the day, I didn't actually mean for her to die. In spite of all those injuries that I've talked about, apparently he didn't intend for her to die. The court heard from the prosecution about how he had deliberately targeted Elizabeth. He knew that she was younger. He knew that she was far more vulnerable. He'd seen her at college and she was somebody he thought, I can exploit. She became part of his fantasy without a doubt. They also heard how his phone showed that he'd made several internet searches for porn, rape and bondage. And I know that people listening to this can say, well, you know what? People have those particular interests. People like playing with those ideas. It doesn't mean that they want to actually go and do it. BS. Let me tell you, there are some individuals who are into BDSM. I get it. It's a particular kink. It's consenting parties. They enjoy a bit of it. They enjoy the slap. They enjoy the tickle. Some enjoy even, shall we say, more strenuous types of bondage and pain. Sadomasochism is something that we see rarely, but it exists. But when you are searching specifically for porn that is about rape and bondage, you are doing that because you have sadistic inclinations. To watch somebody in pain, terrified, to watch somebody having be violated against their will, that takes a certain kind of mentality. It's a broken mentality. It means you have a predisposition for sadism, and it means you are a problem, particularly to women. But this is what he's doing. They also heard, of course, how he plied Elizabeth with alcohol before he raped her, before he strangled her, before he did exactly what he did when he was looking in those videos to get titillated, to feed that fantasy. He did exactly what he did in those fantasy ideas in actuality with Elizabeth. It's as simple as that. So he used those videos to pump those feelings, to legitimise those desires to some degree, and then he acted them out on Elizabeth, using her own t-shirt, likely, to kill her, which is just harrowing. They also stressed that Elizabeth was assaulted when she was incapable of consenting. We have a law in the UK where if you are drunk, you can't consent, so it's rape, whatever. The prosecution said that Gould absolutely got a sadistic pleasure, a sadistic sexual enjoyment out of Elizabeth's humiliation, and that he really enjoyed inflicting injury through pain and just enjoyed the causing of fear to her. It's harrowing to imagine we're talking about this young, vulnerable woman when we're describing this, because that's what's happening. He liked seeing her in pain. He liked seeing her afraid. He liked taking her life from her. They also, as a prosecution, argued that his motive was the gratification of an extremely sadistic sexual desire. Amen to that. The prosecution are great in this case. They are going down the road of this man planned, this man premeditated, this man had fantasies that had become a fixation within his mindset, where he'd found a victim that fitted his profile, and then he finally carried out the killing. Now, Gould, he says, yeah, I did kill Elizabeth, but I didn't actually intend to. I didn't want to murder her. I didn't know that I was going to end up with a corpse next to me in bed. I didn't want to cause her serious harm. She just happened to die whilst we were engaged in this sexual play. However, in spite of the fact that initially he goes not guilty, I imagine when he heard the opening statement, shall we say, by the prosecution, I don't know. I'm just going to imagine he was sitting there thinking, I'm just listening to those opening statements, and those opening statements paint me as a sadistic monster. And I'm going to imagine, just standing here from this perspective with a tiny little bit of analysis and a tiny little bit of insight, that it's likely I'm definitely going to get found guilty of all the charges. So maybe I'll just go away, have a little bit of a word with myself in my defence and say, actually, I'm guilty of all of it. That's exactly what happened. On the second day of his trial, Simon Gould pled guilty to murder, rape, sexual assault, and 2 counts of assault by penetration, despite denying all 5 of those counts the day prior. Now, his defence lawyer, who I imagine was sitting there going, on one hand, I am relieved, whilst I like trying to win cases, the idea of this man ever walking our streets again would be a failure of a massive level. And also, I'm not sure that I like losing in such an enormous way, which I will because it's clear he's a murdering bastard. But essentially, the defence lawyer said that they'd received written communication from Gould saying that he was overcome with remorse and didn't want to put Elizabeth's family through a trial. I mean, could this guy be any more sinister? So again, it's not about him, it's about them. It's not about his freedom and liberty, it's about their struggle to have to manage going through a trial. I mean, anyone who is innocent doesn't care about the people who've lost the person they love. You may have a feeling that it's sad the person died, but you know ultimately you didn't do anything wrong and you are gonna absolutely fight for your freedom, come hell or high water. There is no way you'll be like, I've decided to go guilty. Why? Are you guilty? No, I'm not guilty. I'm not guilty of any of it. It was just a horrible accident. Okay, well, we'll just say that you're not guilty. No, I'm gonna go guilty. Why? You'll be looking at a very long sentence in prison. I know, I'm just a very good person. Yes, you're a good person who's apparently innocent, so let's just go for a not guilty. No. Why? I just want to protect the family that I have nothing to do with and don't know. I literally have no relationship with them whatsoever. They mean nothing to me, but I'm just going to protect them for the sake of the person that unfortunately died accidentally whilst with me. You're massively guilty, aren't you? I am massively guilty on all charges with respect. But anyway, this is what gets peddled. So the defence said, on his behalf, we accept that he was overcome with remorse. He says he wishes he could turn the clock back and he realises the pain and suffering is caused to her family and friends and hopes that this recognition brings some comfort of the acknowledgement of his guilt. Let me tell you, I can answer that very quickly. No, it won't bring any comfort to Elizabeth's family. They are heartbroken because you killed their immeasurably, incalculably, priceless human that they loved with all of the world. You took that from them. So your acknowledgement means jack all with respect. Now, in a victim personal statement that was read to the court during the sentencing hearing, Ms. McCann's mother, Debbie, said this. Lizzie was always so trusting, but she'd often get let down and friends would use her when convenient. This never deterred her though. Lizzie always wanted to make new friends. We have seriously struggled to accept that she's gone. I keep trying to ring her in an attempt to speak to her again. No parent should have to survive without their child. As a mother, I felt her death was my responsibility as I failed to protect her. She said Lizzie's personality touched everyone who met her. She was the most amazing, beautiful daughter and sister anyone could ever ask for. And we will always miss her. Isn't it heartbreaking that her mother feels that guilt? This is a mother who adored her daughter, who clearly would have walked to the ends of the earth to protect her. And yet because of this man's selfish actions, she has to live with that guilt and that feeling that she failed to protect somebody that undoubtedly she would have protected had she known her daughter was in such grave danger. Now, when it came down to the sentencing, the judge rightly said, these are truly wicked offences. I'm satisfied, to be sure, on all the evidence that you are a highly dangerous sexual predator who has an obsession with extreme sexual violence as evidenced by your previous convictions, your internet search history and your conduct in this case. You derive sexual gratification from the infliction of violence and pain on women. This was a prolonged and violent sexual attack over the course of several hours. Amen to that summing up. And on the 22nd of February, Simon Gould was jailed for life. He was ordered to serve a minimum term of 35 years. When the judge talked about this sentence, they said, I emphasise that this is a minimum term, not a fixed term. It may be that the parole board will decide that it's never safe to release you. But by that time that they come to consider you, you will be a very old man. I'm just going to throw it in there. I hope it'll be a very dead man. I hope it'll be removed in a box and put in a shallow grave without any headstone in the future. Or maybe just incinerated and, I don't know, fed to something that will eat ashes. That's not fair. I'm not even sure that anything eats ashes. But if it does, maybe we could try feeding them his. Duncan Thorpe of Greater Manchester Police's Major Incident Support Unit said this. Firstly, my thoughts are with Lizzie's family and loved ones at this very difficult time. Lizzie was preyed upon by Simon Gould. He befriended her and then plied her with drinks. He then took her back to his flat where he raped and sexually assaulted her before strangling her with a ligature. He then went on to say that she sadly died as a result of her injuries. He said that Gould's disregard for Lizzie and her welfare is unfathomable. Gould claimed that this was just a game gone wrong and the catalogue of injuries that Lizzie sustained were accidental as opposed to horrific and definitely not consented to. Gould is an extremely dangerous individual who fully deserves a sentence imposed on him this day. To be fair, I think it's quite lenient, that sentence. I think when we look at somebody like this man, yes, he might be very old if he's ever to get out of prison again, but he will never, ever be safe to be around women. Why do we keep taking chances where the lives of women are concerned? Why do we not accept that this kind of human being is a danger and will always be a danger? Now, following Gould's sentencing, an inquest was opened into the death of Elizabeth McCann, and rightly so, because the failures are massive. A request was made for an inquest by Elizabeth's family, and it was granted rightfully by the coroner. It would be terrible not to when you consider that this death, in my opinion, was absolutely avoidable. The inquest investigated the circumstances surrounding Gould's incarceration, his release from custody, his risk level, and also how on earth he came to be at a college where he met Elizabeth. Now, first of all, the lack of risk assessment before Gould was let onto a college course was concluded at the inquest as probably contributing to Elizabeth's death. Come on, it's not probable, it's obvious. Of course it contributed to Elizabeth's death, because if he hadn't been at the college, he wouldn't have met Elizabeth. There you go, problem solved. She would still be alive. The coroner said it is probable that had there not been a failure to share the July 2022 incident, that's the one where obviously a friend of Elizabeth's had had him try to kiss her and she'd rejected him. So it's that incident they're referring to. They said that if those previous failures had not occurred, then Elizabeth McCann would not have died on the day she did. They also brought up the failures of probation and police to act on a number of warning signs, and that these were also determined as probably contributing to her death. I have been to a coroner's court. Let me tell you, they're one of the most frustrating experiences. In my own experience, it was my father's suicide. And let me tell you, you do feel like it's an all-boys club where they all get together and try to defend all the authorities when they can get away with doing that, even when the actions have been indefensible. And even here, when it's clear that her death could have been avoided, the use of probably plays in. It's like, yeah, okay, all the evidence is here. Clearly you failed. Clearly you didn't safeguard. Clearly this person died because of those actions. But you know, we're just going to throw in probably because, hey, it could have happened. It's like they're never willing on the whole to just come down hard and say this is unforgivable, because it is. Elizabeth's life mattered and their failures contributed to her death. They basically concluded that there were multiple failures by police, probation services and an NHS trust that allowed a convicted rapist to enrol at a college where he was firstly able to befriend a vulnerable Elizabeth McCann and then murder her. Now, the college, they accepted the conclusion of the inquest and they are now commissioning an independent review. They did apologise about their failure to have systems and processes in place that could have protected Elizabeth. To be honest, that means nothing. Elizabeth's dead. You don't get to apologise for something that basically was critical when it comes down to the murder of this poor girl. A girl that should have been safeguarded in the care of the college. A probation spokesperson also commented on the findings that the coroner addressed, and they said that they've reviewed the issues that have occurred and they've got further reviews to take, which will ensure they take action needed to keep the public safe in the future. But they didn't, did they? They didn't keep the public safe. Elizabeth's dead. And I think it goes without saying, it makes sense that the public will not trust the probation service because these kind of events are catastrophic. And we hear the same trope coming out again and again that lessons will be learned, reviews will be done, things will change, and then we cover another killing. A Greater Manchester Police spokesperson said that they respect the findings of the Coroner's Court and a full review has taken place to ensure they make further improvements in the areas that have been identified. All of that is simply far too little, far too late. Elizabeth McCann died in the most heinous of circumstances at the hand of a repeat offender who should not have been around women at all. He admitted he'd been drinking. He admitted he'd been rejected by a woman. These were big red flags and indicators that something terrible was brewing, and it did. And Elizabeth McCann will not live the rest of her life because of those systemic failures in the authorities that were meant to protect her and the public from predators like Simon Gold. I'd love to know your feelings on this case. It frustrates me deeply. It frustrates me that there are so many opportunities that have been missed in this case to ensure that Elizabeth McCann didn't die. And yet here we are talking about the brutal final moments that that girl had to endure at the hands of this absolute sadist.
That's it for Bang to Rights today. Join me for the next episode. See you then. Be safe.